A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
I hit it. I hit record. We're recording. We're on. We're live.
We're on.
Live.
Fuck it. We're doing it live.
From Brooklyn.
It's Friday morning. What do you have plans this weekend? Do you have any plans this weekend?
Yes.
I actually have to look at my schedule.
Co's going to a birthday party at Dave and Buster's tomorrow, and I'm going to be alone with...
Griff Dog
in the house.
What are you guys going to do?
If the queue's running, I'm going to take him to a kid thing that's going on at City Point, because I love walking around there, and they have ube soft serve that I'm addicted to.
Wait, City Point...
You know, like Albee Square, like, you know, where the
movie
theaters.
Oh my God, I love that place. Wait, by the way, what time, if you go, I can meet you there.
Great. Sunday, there is a thing called Camptopia at the Atlantic Center that is basically like tables of camps advertising their services. So if you go, they're like, we're the slime camp. Do you want to come to our table and build something? But it's for kids. Like, they're basically like, bring your kids, because like everything is like
an
advertisement for, isn't this fun? So I think we might take
you
the kids there
to.
Sunday.
When is, like, where is the Atlantic Center?
You know, Barclays.
Oh, Atlantic Barclays Center. I just, yeah. Oh, amazing.
Another reason I hope the queue's running.
Yeah,
don't do me wrong, girl.
You know, when the queue isn't running, it really
You're
is.
You're stuck here. Like, you have
really
to be and stay
hard.
In Brooklyn. It's
well,
over.
You could also walk to the B.
Not on the weekend. Doesn't run. When the
oh,
queue
I didn't
is
know
down,
that.
We'll just have to drive, but. I hate driving.
You did a great job going to Costco. Quinn got
I almost killed
in.
Us like three times
no.
on a very short 20-minute drive. So
no,
that's
you didn't.
Very generous.
There was one moment where it was a little dicey with the buses. So, you know, sometimes in a New York street, and this is not something I would be used to, but there's like a white line where you're supposed to stop. And sometimes it's
people
so
are like,
far back,
yeah.
you're like, that's a suggestion. You know, like in yeah. your defense, that white line was like a half a block
yeah.
back. And you're like, there's no way that's where they meant to put that line. And it turns out it is. They did put it there intentionally.
Oh, my God. Can I tell you what I did last night?
Yeah.
The gig that I did last night in Grand Central was that I was part of a puzzle hunt that goes through Grand Central where people are solving puzzles
yeah.
and clues. And my role was that I played a person that had to be in a big hurry with a suitcase walking through the main terminal, like around the clock.
God,
and they had
it,
to
yeah.
find me and scan my luggage tag to get their clue. But my job was to, like, they would keep being like, can you stop? Like, they're not in, like, a theatrical thing. So they're like, can you stop so I can scan this? And I'd be like, no, I'm in a big hurry. But I, like, just kept walking and they'd, like, chase me. And the security at Grand Central was looking at me like, are you all right, ma'am? Because people were, like, chasing me through Grand Central all evening. Oh, man. It
Did
was
Did you have
good.
To talk to security? And you'd be like, it's a thing I'm doing.
No, I avoided them at all costs. I really wanted them to come to
be
me.
Be in on it.
And
oh,
they
interesting.
You know, no matter how weird things got, they never did. It was
it's
sort of
Grand
a dare.
Grand Central, Quinn. Shit always gets weird there. There's no fucking way it's not going to be weird there.
So right. The upcoming
That's the thing
chapter,
about doing immersive shows in New York is you're like, I'm so embarrassed. Wait a minute. I'm the sanest person here.
Here.
There were many times in the show that Quinn and I met on where like I'd be playing a part and they were supposed to come see me. But there's like a person who probably is not mentally well.
But it's more theatrical in many ways.
But it's really theatrical. And so they're like, this, and this person is yes-anding the fuck out of them.
It's like, it's
and
it's
like, I have a poem.
You should talk to me.
You should talk to me. And it's like delivering odes to them. And they're like writing it down. And I'm in the corner going, when should I intervene?
Has this gotten dangerous yet?
Yeah, it's the danger of it. You're going, okay, this person. And they're like all, like, yeah, it could really switch on a dime for you.
Speaking of... immersion. And speaking of like the chapters in the life of doing embarrassing gigs,
yeah,
and saying yes to everything because you need the money.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely got a booking email from a company Matt and I sometimes work for that was like, you are cast next week in the role of Queen of Hearts on stilts. Accept or deny the role. And like I clicked the accept button and I'm booked for it. And
wait, on stilts?
I don't know how to walk on stilts.
Quinn?
But I said yes, and I'm doing it next week. How do you think it's going to go? It's good money. I've got to do it.
How much?
It's like $500, and Matt's doing it too.
That's what I'm babysitting for the kids.
Yeah. I have to do it, even if I get badly hurt.
Quinn, have you looked at – has Matt ever walked on stilts?
Maybe I'll watch a YouTube on how, but I don't really know what kind of stilts they're going to have either. I hope I don't have to provide my own.
Quinn, how are you going to get down?
I don't know how I'm going to get up or down. I've never been on stilts.
Quinn. Quinn, you've signed up to walk on stilts and you mm-hmm. don't know how?
Yeah. You really need the work, Carrie.
Wait, I am deceased. I am dead. Here's the thing.
Annie,
what's
you
crazy,
guys really did me.
Here's what's fucking dirty. Crazy about it, too, is that, like, I'm watching your kids, and you and your husband are going to be from a high.
I might be their new mommy. I was going to tell you. You should warm them up for that while we're gone.
Because yesterday was with Griff, and Griff was like, where's mom? And then Matt was like, should we FaceTime her? And he was like, yeah. And then he's like, all right, we're FaceTime. He's like, no, I don't wanna.
And then he didn't talk to me.
It's really weird.
He like ignored me.
But I can vouch that he was like, mom, I'm sorry. What?
I don't know. I just am saying yes to things because I need to. But
it's your yes year. Hello, Shonda Rhimes. Holy shit.
It's only a matter of time before somebody gets hurt.
And I think gonna it's going to be you. Me. It's for sure going to be you.
Or a guest. I could fall on a guest.
You're going to fall on a child.
It's like a country club. I mean, I think it's like a very fancy event with like a lot of atmosphere. And I'm a stilt walker that doesn't know how to walk on stilts.
How are you not afraid? Are you afraid? How are you feeling? Are you just
I have gone into a mental place of like unwellness that is like I only will worry about it when I'm trying to get on the stilts. And it is like that was sort of what I did with the getting killed at the dinner party. I just
and the
like
toilet legs.
Saying, and the toilet legs. Like, I just say yes to things and I show up and try to problem solve in the moment.
Quinn, what if you know what you should do? You should actually look up. Oh my God.
How many people have died on stilts? That's what I'll look up.
Is that your story for today?
I don't know.
Is that your story?
Somebody
died. I'm so beyond confused, right? I'm like, I'm really. Is it like, are stilts one size fits all?
I don't know any answers.
Because you're going to be on like grass and like cobblestone.
No one asked me for my measurements. Oh, they have them. I've worked for them before. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Oh my God.
Yeah, grass. Oh, you're so right. Like many uneven. It's not like I'm in like an.
You better hope it's a fucking ice. You better hope it's icy. You're like, it's too dangerous for stilts. You better pray for an ice storm.
Okay. Like if you. TBD, right? TBD. To be dead. To be dead.
I'm shocked. Like, I am really. First of all, we live together. I don't know why you or your husband haven't told me this yet.
I mean,
because I think you're both in denial. I think you're both in denial. I think you guys are both going, it'll be fine. Worst case scenario, I'll go, oh, I can't. Mm-hmm. Pay me my $500. No, I can't.
Maybe my character should be on the ground, I think I'll say, when I arrive. Just
I've been
for
thinking
levels,
a lot.
I think that it will look nicer. If.
I've been thinking a lot about it. It can't be that hard. There are people that do it all the time.
Yeah, I think it might be, though.
And the whole description is like stilt walking.
Yeah. I accepted a gig that the description of the gig is Queen of Hearts on stilts. That is the name of the gig. I have not been contacted about anything I'll be doing other than I think putting on a costume, acting like the Queen of Hearts, but also walking on stilts. And I feel good about two of those three things. So I said yes.
I just, like, I'm worried. Okay. I'm actually worried.
Yeah, I can tell. I think.
But here's what's more alarming is that you're not worried at all. Like, that's, yeah, I think I don't
have space for that.
Here's the thing is I'm overcompensating for your lack of worry. I'm going.
You should talk about it in therapy today. God, you should be like, I'm really worried about
my friend. I actually been feeling pretty good lately because I've been getting a lot of work done. And then yesterday it felt like, I think yesterday it was hard.
You got a new to-do list.
Here's what's hard about yesterday is I looked at my schedule and I was like, I don't have anything planned. I didn't have a meeting. I didn't have, like, I had the day to just catch up work. And then it became all work. Right. And then I was like looking for today and I was like, again and again, yeah, and again and again and again and again. And I need to remind myself and let this be a lesson to anybody else. Nothing really is on fire.
So true.
And mistakes happen and it's okay.
Mistakes happen. You can fall when you're on stilts and it, you might get hurt.
Oh my God.
But then you'll get up again. Or will you? I just don't know. Listen, we've all just got to keep chugging along, okay?
I love that you and Matt both took this. God, I'm about to be a mommy. This question, this spot. Yeah, where do your kids go? Mom, another mama?
You want me to?
Where do your kids go?
To you, straight to you. we don't have wills.
But like who, wait.
We don't have wills and we don't have ways.
Because I can edit this to say whoever you want.
Oh, we don't have a thing. Like,
I feel like Koa would want to go to Hawaii. Koa would want to.
Well, Koa does love Hawaii.
Do you think another mama would take the kids?
I mean, I guess she would have to. Who else is going to do it?
Brianna?
No offense, Brianna, but I don't think you want both my children joining Lyle.
So sad to think about. I don't want to think about you dying. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't I tell you a story?
Okay.
All right. So this story.
By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
I'm Quinn LaPasta.
And I'm Carrie Pima. And we have no Patreon. So what are you doing? Join Patreon.
That hurts our feelings.
That really hurts our feelings.
And our bank accounts.
And frankly.
You just heard what you have driven me to. Have you no shame?
Frankly, though, if I was listening to this, I'd be like, I'm not going to pay so you take more weird gigs
you
so that you have to tell
culpable.
Us.
Culpable.
Here's the thing. These stories are incredible. The things that you're doing for us for content, thank you. You're taking so many for the team right now.
You're welcome.
Great.
I am telling you the story. I'm not going to tell you the name of it. Okay. Business Insider, New York
Shout
Times.
Shout out to Bix.
Yeah. Independent had a really good article by Tim Holmes that was excellent. The crime wire, say that three times fast.
Crime wire.
Can't even say it once. And of course,
you also
my favorite,
can't say memoir.
Wikipedia.
You can memoir, say memoir,
crime wire, memoir, crime yeah. wire.
They're not spelled the same, but they're pronounced the same for you. Which
they
is
rhyme.
Fun.
That's so fun. So let's start out in March of 1951. Canada has gone to war with Korea. Okay?
Wait, what?
Canada was involved in a war with Korea.
Oh, wait. Quinn, okay, this is how I know Quinn doesn't know fucking history.
Yeah.
The Korean War took place from 1950
Canada
to 1951. Yes, but the way you made it sound was
Canada
versus Korea. And that's
who would
not,
win. Now put money down. Who's going to win?
What's happening is,
if you're me, you don't know the answer.
What's happening is North Korea, the communists are about to like attack. They're attacking Seoul and South Korea. So the allies, Canada, the U.S.
Sure.
England, they're coming and they're fighting for against North, okay?
I'll have to take
so
your
Quinn,
word for it.
It was not Canada
versus Korea.
Korea.
1951.
You said that, and I literally, my first thought was, here's how my thought process went. I went, it's crazy how Americans don't know the history of other countries, was the first thought I said. And then I go, and then I said, wait, look at the source. But I said, look who we're talking to. And I said, let me go. There's an actually easier answer, which is the truth. Okay, so Canada versus Korea, the famous war of 1951.
This is serious. It's a war, Carrie. Please have some respect.
Medical. I hope nobody thinks of us as like actual intelligent information. Oh my God.
Should I start a history podcast?
The history according to Quinn It was weird. So World War One was actually just like a fight between brothers.
It's weird. Started as a fight over dinner. Uno, in fact, was to blame. So medical officers are in short supply.
Yes.
Okay? And in walks hero Joseph Sir. He shows up at the recruiting office in New Brunswick, and he's like, you guys, I'm a doctor. I hear you're in need. And they're like, oh, fuck. Great. It's so great you're here. Here's a scalpel. Like, come on in. It's not that fast, but it is almost that fast. Like, they don't check his background or credentials. They're just like, you're enlisted. We're so excited. We're going to commission you as this, like, surgeon lieutenant.
They don't have internet back then. There's, like, a lot of, like...
Yeah.
They can't really do
And they just, like, need this doctor. So they're like, come on, hurry. Shit. We'll assign you to this hospital. It's in Halifax. And then, actually, you know what? We have to move you to this... A destroyer, like a big boat.
Yeah.
Like it was called the HMCS Cayuga, a Royal Canadian Navy destroyer. Sounds like.
It's very intense.
Yeah. So he's like, great. He gets on this ship for the second tour in the waters of Korea. And he starts doing what doctors do. He's doing all manner of medicine. Minor surgeries. He's doing dental work. He's healing infections. He's giving people medicines. I don't know what he's doing. He's a doctor. And the commander actually had to see him and get like an infected tooth pulled or something. Everything is going fine. And then there is a commando style, which I don't know what that means. I'm like, no one's wearing underwear.
That's my first
thought.
I was
like,
too.
So no one wore underwear and there was a raid. That can't be what that means, but I did read there was a commando style raid off the west coast of Korea, and they bring on board the ship after this raid three critically wounded people. They're all South Koreans, and they bring them aboard Cayuga, and they're like, Dr. Sir, what do we have to
his
do?
His name is Dr. Sir.
It's C-Y-R.
I know, but I just really like that his name is Dr. Sir. It's just like weird.
Dr. Sir.
Mr. Sir.
Sir, sir. It's like airplane.
Yeah, I really like it.
Yeah. Roger, roger. And he has to go into these really serious surgeries. He removes a bullet from one man's chest. He amputates a man's foot. Everybody survives. He rocks it, and he fucking slays.
Tell me this guy doesn't have a medical degree.
Well, tell me this guy doesn't have a medical degree without telling me this guy doesn't have a – I'm going to. So
– because everything is working out. It seems like he's doing great.
Well, everybody's watching him, and he's so chill. Like, in the face of this, it's like he's like –
he's like such a level head. Yeah.
He's really good at bedside manner, really calm, really collected, doesn't panic, does these surgeries to get these men back on their – I was going to say feet, and then I realized how mean that was. Okay. You get what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I do. Okay. I do.
But the people that watch him do this are like, wow, this guy's great. Like, we should recommend him for a medal. And so all the heroic details and stuff of what went down on the ship get to the press, and it gets printed in the paper. And a woman reading the paper is reading this article and being like, okay, Dr. Sir that did all these heroic things. And she's like, Dr. Sir, that's my son. Wait, my son's not aboard a ship right now in Korean waters. Like, that's not so. My son's in Grand Falls, New Brunswick, practicing medicine. And so she calls him and she's like, this is so weird.
Is this you?
And he's like, no, that's obviously not me. I'm in New Brunswick, but I think I know that guy. I think that guy's like a monk that I met in Maine, Brother John Payne. And he's like, what the hell's going on? Now, Brother John Payne had held a position at the Brothers of Christian Instruction in Maine. Does not sound like a really fun school. Like, he was a big deal when he was there. He had founded a whole college, and he had it chartered by the state, and then at that time, he met a doctor named Joseph Sir. So you're like, what was a monk doing pretending to be a doctor?
Right.
Why is John Payne parading himself as Dr. Joseph Sir? I got to break it to you. He's not a monk either. And John Payne is also not this guy's name. This guy's name is Ferdinand Waldo Demera, which if that was your name, why wouldn't you go by it?
Well, because it's very specific and he seems like he's John Payne. He's trying to not go by a certain name.
Holy shit. So he was born in 1921. Most people call him Fred. He's Ferdinand Waldo. He's Fred. He's born in Lawrence, Massachusetts in like an upper class situation. And his dad's brother, Napoleon Demera Sr., owned a bunch of theaters in their neighborhood in Lawrence. And his dad was a union member there. And in the Great Depression, his dad gets totally screwed. I guess no one's going to the theater. And they just stop making money. It's a really scary time. They have to move from their really nice neighborhood to the poor section of the city. And at that time, as a power grab or as like a scared kid, he ends up somehow conning a local chocolate shop to give chocolates to his whole class that he doesn't have the money to pay for. But somehow he has like this mini con as a kid that is successful and gets him and his friends all these chocolates. And he's like, this is the life for me.
Wow.
I am a con man. He's also just like any con man, addicted to the I got away with it thrill. So during this time, while his family is not doing so well financially, he turns 16 and runs away. And he tries to join a monastery. He tries to join the Trappist monks in Rhode Island. And he's there for like 2 years. And they're like, you're not a Trappist. Like, no. You know what? Go to this other place. And he goes to Brothers of Charity in Montreal. And then he gets transferred again to Massachusetts, and he's a monk there teaching fourth grade. Like, basically, I don't think he was getting kicked out for any reason in particular, but this guy moves around a lot. Mm-hmm. I think most con artists do, and I don't know all the details of it because I couldn't find them. When his parents find out where he is, he's allowed to stay. Like, they're not, like, come home because they're kind of like, it's not like he's doing something. He didn't join a motorcycle gang. He's pretending to be a monk teaching the fourth grade. Like, they're like, okay, you can stay. But they're in their head, they're like, how long is this weird phase gonna last? But he stays with the monks long enough that he does earn his habit, I think is what it's called.
That's what nuns get.
I think it is. I think monks get a habit too.
Okay.
It's just it doesn't have a collar. It has like a hood.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
You know, like,
yeah,
I'm in here.
Yeah.
I wish you guys could have seen that.
Yeah, like a really Sith, good like monk. Star Wars. I'm in here.
I'm a Wookiee or whatever.
That's not what it is.
Okay.
I'm a Jedi, I think is what you're looking for.
But the monks are like, they recognize he doesn't fit in. And so when he's 18, they're like, yeah, you gotta go. You're not a monk. So he keeps, but he's like, I am a monk. So he keeps trying to join other orders. Well, if you went to school for
it, it feels like, you know, I mean, cash in.
Yeah, so he's just like, he keeps traveling around the world trying to find the right monastery for him, and he ends up in Kentucky under the fake name Anthony Ignolia. Then he meets a guy who's like, I know you, you were at that Trappist monastery from the beginning of the story. And he's like, keeps! And then he like runs out the door, and there's like an
out. And his hood stays there, like he's like, it's his, and then he grabs his hand and he,
yep, so that's like an outline of him.
Yeah, I like that.
So he dashes away, goes to Dubuque, Iowa. And then he's like, I guess this isn't working out. I'm going to go home. This monk thing. So he ends up stealing some money in a car and he joins the army. Okay. And it's 1941. He's 19.
World War II is afoot.
I believe you.
You have no reason not to.
I have no reason not to. The army, it's not for him either. It's not a good fit. He really doesn't like it, but like getting out of the army, I think, is tricky.
It's hard.
It's tricky. It's so hard. What he does is he just steals somebody's identity and runs.
Okay.
Okay. And then he's like, maybe it's the Navy. I meant the Navy. That's what I meant. So goes and joins the Navy as a hospital corpsman. I don't know what that is. What do you think it is?
I think it's probably a hospital. I bet.
Like a corpsman. I just picture corpses, but that can't be what it is.
I don't, you know what? I was going to make a guess. And you know what? Sometimes I don't need to make a guess because I don't know what it is. And I'm just going to say, I don't know.
I was hoping if I said it, someone will write in. Okay. Write in today.
Write in
today. What's a corpse?
Let us know.
By the time you write in, I'm going to be like, what?
What's funny is that Quinn could have, we could have, here's what's interesting about us. Is
just
we could
Google
easily
it.
Google it. And you know what? We say no.
I Google too many things to tell the story.
I
reach a peak point where I've learned enough in a day.
I
can't learn too many new things in a day. Okay. And at some point, his dad is like, you got to turn yourself in for desertion. Like, you left the army, dude. And he's like, no, this Navy stuff, this is going to be the thing for me. And he does pass, like, the step one course. But then they're like, you don't really have an education background, so you can't get the position you want. So, but he wants to do medical school. So he just, like, makes some fake documents that are like, this guy is all set. He definitely has college qualifications. He's ready. And then he's like, these look so good, these documents I made, that instead of applying to medical school, I'm just going to try to get commissioned as an officer. And then they're like, these papers that you are so proud of, they're fake. We see that they're fake. And he's like, okay. And then he fakes his own suicide.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
where there's a will, there's a way.
So that's how he gets out of the Navy. And in 1942, he becomes Dr. Robert Linton French, who is a former Navy officer and a psychologist.
Hmm.
Yeah. Dr. French shows up at a Benedictine. Thank you. Benedictine.
Mm-hmm. Benedictine.
Okay. That word does not want to come out of my mouth.
No. But it's...
He goes to a monastery. Do you even need to know what kind? It's in Arkansas. And he's like, I'm here to be Dr. French. And they're like, great. But then they call him to the abbot's office and they're like, yo, you've been here a couple weeks and we were just like looking through the paperwork. Looks kind of weird. And he's like, what? No. And then he jumps through the window. He doesn't, but he does leave. He like leaves. And then he goes to Chicago and then he goes to Milwaukee. And he's just like constantly, I think, coming into conflict with people that like start to figure out he's a fraud, and then he just beats it. And that's his pattern. Although I did read that in one of the instances where he left, somebody didn't like his cooking skills. Like maybe he was having to cook for the people there, which is not befitting of a doctor. But maybe he told them he was a chef. I don't know. Freddie is hard to get
a read on.
A read on at any given time. He does move to New Jersey as Dr. French and apply to work at a bunch of Catholic colleges. And then he gets employed to teach psychology at Gannon College in Pennsylvania. He gets made dean of the School of Philosophy.
That's
he
good.
He teaches psychology
Talk about
there.
Failing up.
So what's crazy is he's teaching psychology there as Dr. French, and he publishes a book called How to Bring Up Your Child under Dr. French's name, under this fake name. Like he is like...
He's almost good at what he does.
He's great at what he does. I feel like I'm painting two different pictures, so it might be confusing because like people figure out who he is. But what he does is anytime someone's onto him, he beats it. But then he shows up somewhere and if he can like swing it, he takes big swings.
And it seems like it works. Like he did
smart.
Open heart surgery on people. He like, he took a bullet out of someone's heart.
He does amazing.
He's like a little Frank Abagnale.
Yes. Yeah. Completely. So while he's working as an instructor in Washington State at some point after this, I think he's Dr. French at that time as well, and the FBI comes and is like, you actually have to serve 18 months at the Naval Disciplinary Barracks in California because of desertion. Like, you can't just
and
change your name and beat it. So he does go do that, and then he gets released, and... His next fake name is Cecil Boyce Hamann. This guy has a doctorate degree in zoology and studied at Northeastern University.
Fun, though. Zoology? Let's go.
And he studied law.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
People just had time back then and just fucking learn shit.
Well, what ends up happening is I think he legitimately, like, okay, as Hamann, he goes to law school. And then he's like, law school's too... Like, this is slow. This is, like, hard and slow. I'm not into it. I'm going to give myself a PhD. So he just gives him – he gives Cecil Hamann a PhD. He's like, enough. You deserve it, Cecil. So he gives himself a PhD. Then
when he gives himself, does he mean he goes through the classes or he just is like, I have this now?
Yes. Okay. The latter. Gotcha. In seconds, he has a PhD.
Wow.
Yes. It's magic.
Does ITT Tech know about him?
That's your competition. So then he gets another teaching job at a Christian college and they're like, this guy's amazing. He's a cancer researcher. He's incredible. What? And he's like, I think we should change this college into a state-approved university and I'll be the chancellor of it. And they do decide to turn it into a state-approved university, but somehow in the process, they like don't adopt him as the chancellor. Like he doesn't move forward with it. But he essentially founded a school. Like it, he's doing things, man.
That's amazing.
He's fucking doing things. Sometime during this window of time when he's got all these fake names and he's teaching is when he becomes Brother John Payne. I'm iffy when that happens, but I do know that it's as Brother John Payne that he meets Joseph Sir, the doctor, the Canadian surgeon. Yeah. Now, Sir is moving to the U.S. to start a medical practice because he's from Canada and he needs help with all his immigration paperwork. So he's like talking about that. And Freddie, a.k.a. Brother John, is like, I'll help you. Give me all your documents say who you are. So he's like, here you go. And he's like, no problem. But he copies all the shit. So he is able to like give him his stuff back legitimately. But he also has all this paperwork that says that he is this doctor. Okay.
Whoa.
That's when he shows up in Canada and is like, heard y'all needed doctors. I'm a doctor. I'm Dr. Sir. And they're like, step aboard the ship. And he's like, sure. And then they're like, there's all these people that are dying. And he's like, sure.
Whoa.
What he does is he studies medical books while he's on the boat, fast as he fucking can, teaches himself like surgeries when he needs to, and then goes out the door and like performs them. He gives people a healthy fucking dose of penicillin every time he does anything because he's like, I don't really know what I'm doing. He doesn't want them to get like infected, but it works. And he worked on, I talked about these people, these South Korean soldiers that were near death. It was like 16 injured soldiers. So like three, I think, were near death, but it was 16. And that happened like, just to give you like a play-by-play on the speed at which that happened. It's like, imagine 16 injured soldiers are brought onto the ship. They go in a room to prep them for surgery. He runs to his room, kind of having seen what the deal is, and is looking up in his medical book how to do what he needs to do, the surgeries he needs to do. He's speed reading how to do them, and then he's running back out performing them.
Oh, my God.
Okay?
That's amazing.
So when this shit goes down, the real Dr. Joseph Sir is like, ahem. And so they're like, oh, shit. They take fake Joseph, sorry, they take Freddie, and they're like, you got to go back to Canada, and we got to, like, quietly fire you from the fucking
boat.
Navy post as a fucking doctor. And they're like, in their mind, they're like, clearly, we don't know the history with this guy. He faked his name. But not for a second do they doubt he's a doctor. Like, they're like, you used a fake name, so we have to, like, fire you. But in their heads, they're like, they just saw him do this. They're like, yeah, he's a doctor for sure. So then he doesn't get in trouble for that. It's just like, you faked a name, we can't hire you.
Holy shit.
But, nobody thinks this guy wouldn't be a doctor. He goes back to the U.S., and when he goes back to the U.S., I think because he got caught, he, like, for the most part is trying out using his own name and working in a bunch of different short-term jobs. And he is bored and he's depressed and he starts to,
well,
like,
can you imagine, like, going and having such, like, excitement?
Wild. Yeah. So he's drinking a lot. He's lolling around. He's just, like, not feeling great. And somehow in 1955, he gets somebody else's paperwork and he's like, I'm gonna go be him.
I'm back.
Ben W. Jones is the person's name that he somehow got the paperwork of, and he gets a job as Ben Jones as a guard at the Huntsville prison in Texas.
Jesus.
And they're like, this guy's good. And they put him in charge of the maximum security wing of the prison. But then, this is so wild. He, upon leaving Canada and having done all these kind of wackadoo things, he talked to Life magazine and he had told them about it. So there was a story about him in Life magazine as this con that in 1956, there's some sort of educational programming that comes to the prison and is like, here's a bunch of magazines. And one of the Life magazines is in there. And so somebody discovers it and is like, that's that guy. And they're like, your name is Ferdinand Waldo Damara. Your name is not Ben Jones. And so he's like, yeah. Zoinks. And they're like, here's the thing. You're great. You can't work at a prison as a guard if your history is that you're like this a crazy criminal. Con. So they're like, nope. So in 1957, somehow he then gets caught and they make him serve like 6 months for, I don't know, any number of lies. But then after that, most of his life is stuff like going on game shows and being like, guess who I am? Yes, and like yes. This kind of thing. Like it's very silly. And I guess at some point he joined the Los Angeles Adventurers Club, but they were like, he's the only person to lie their way into the club. And he like, did like he still perpetrates.
He just wants to get away with it. He's just
yeah.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
I was reading that he has a theory on why it worked so well for him, like why he was able to do this stuff. And he's like, okay, what you need to do is you find some sort of establishment, some sort of organization where there's a bunch of unused power lying around. And then you try to find a way to take the power. What you don't do is try to take the power from anyone. If you go into a place and you try to take power from somebody, there's suddenly motive and there's like a disjointedness where people are curious.
It's like why he started his own school, because he's like, this is just, I want to be chancellor. That's so interesting.
It's like, and it's like you need a doctor, but there's no line. It's like you need a doctor, but there isn't a line of doctors. If I step right up, I'm the only guy. It's like a really smart technique.
That's so interesting.
Where he's like, don't ever step on anyone's toes. And the other thing that he would do is he would delegate.
Yeah.
So it's a really smart thing if you walk into a situation and you don't know. I'm sure there's so many companies like this where the CEO does like nothing.
Yeah.
But they delegate. So it's like walk in, try to pick up power nobody's using, and then be like the person that really trusts all the people that work for them and is like, let, you know, like you're going into surgery. It's like, you should prep the person. You should clean the, like telling people what to do works just as well half the time as doing the thing.
Here I am just living with imposter syndrome.
I know. But he was like, there's, if there's no competition and they can't measure you against anyone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He said, make your own rules and interpretations. Nothing like it. Remember it and expand it into the power vacuum. And he talks about how, I mean, when people talk about him, they're like, first of all, this is not just a person that is like lazy and was like, I'm going to grab unused power. Like he's talking about technique, but that's not taking into account who he was. He was somebody that had the ability to speed read and retain, like a photographic memory. He could legitimately go in and speed read and memorize text and make it make sense to him. He had a crazy high IQ. Whoa. And he was, his ability to like make all these hoaxes work was he could step into these roles and kind of do them. So that's also a really specific kind of person. People were like, people call him a Renaissance man. Like, legitimately, he's a Renaissance man. He could do anything.
That's wild.
So there was a best-selling book in 1959 by Robert Crichton called The Great Imposter that's about him. And there's also a movie made in 1960 that's the same name, and Tony Curtis plays him, which they don't really look alike. And somebody was talking about how the guy that did a biography on him was talking about how he kept giving him money. Because he kept saying, like, I want to go straight. And it was just like another funny con moment where it's like this guy's writing a biography on a con artist and getting conned by the con artist and like keeps giving him money because he's like, oh, I just want to make a change. Robert Crichton said of his book that he wrote, since his aim was to do good, anything he did to do it was justified. With Damara, the end always justifies the means. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it wasn't like totally to like personally enrich himself. It was just
It wasn't. And after all this, he still tried to use aliases. He still tried to like play stunts, but he started to become too well known that it didn't really work. And
that's wild.
So when he's like, by the time he's in his 40s, he's like out of the spotlight and all this has happened. And he's like a 40-year-old. Can you imagine?
No. Jesus.
Like what he did in a lifetime is incredible.
Cool. That's really cool.
And then we don't know much about his 40s. And then I think around 50, he shows up and is like, I'm actually a totally legitimately ordained minister now. And I work at a hospital as their chaplain.
Wow.
And that's what he did. And he used his real name, obviously. And, oh, but then they figure out who he is. And they're like, we want to fire you. And people are like, you can't fire this guy. He's legit. So good at his job, and he is going by his real name. Like, he's doing this, and he is ordained. So, like he didn't get fired, but he almost did because they were like, whoa. This doesn't square in our minds with like who the chaplain should be. There is one thing. Okay, I have to bring this up. I couldn't find this anywhere else, but I bet it's in the book and or like the biography. I'm like reading all this stuff and loving this guy. And then I did read this one thing where I was like, say what? And I couldn't find it anywhere else, but I read this thing that says Melvin Belai was, I guess, a defense attorney and had successfully defended Ferdinand twice against charges of child molestation.
Okay.
That happened when he worked at like a youth camp. But he got off. I don't know. I also
don't love that phrase in that moment. He got off. That's and not he, what you want.
I don't know anything about it, but I do know that Melvin said the strings all ran out on him. There was no way to channel or exploit his tremendous talents, but I never heard him say he had any regrets about anything because he was talking about how he became like sort of depressed later in life where he was like he couldn't really do the things he wanted to do, but he didn't regret any of the things he had done. That anecdotally, I don't know what to do with because I just don't have more information on it. So it's like hard to speak to it one way or another.
No, but acknowledging it is good. Wow.
When they asked him, like, why did you do this? Like, what was your motivation to have like a criminal lifestyle where you were this con artist? You could have been any of these things. You could have been a lawyer. You could have been a doctor. Why'd you do it this way? And he said, rascality, pure rascality. That was his answer.
I like rascality as a word. It's a word I don't know, but I like it.
So he died from a heart attack and complications from diabetes in 1982, and he was 60 years old. So he died kind of young, but what a full life.
What an insane, what a many lives one might say.
Many, many, many
Too
lives.
Many, too many, I would argue.
Greedy.
A little greedy.
See,
when it
greed
comes
again. And that's the story of Ferdinand Waldo Damara.
Whoa, thanks for telling it.
Yeah. Anytime. Except I probably won't do it again because I already did it.
Let me tell my story. Okay, I'm doing the story of Christina Grimmie. It's a short, it's a little sweet, but it's a story that I'd like to tell because I think we've heard of her and I need to tell her story. I
got What's her name?
Christina Grimmie.
Okay.
I got her information from Wikipedia, Investigation Discovery, ChristinaGrimmie.com, and The Independent. Okay, Christina Grimmie, a little bit of backstory. She's born in New Jersey, and from a very young age, they see that she is an incredibly talented musician, and she's very skilled at singing. They notice this at 6 years old. And at 15 years old, it's 2009, so imagine the hair, imagine the eyeliner, and she has a YouTube channel.
Fabulous.
Fabulous for her. She's covering songs by Miley Cyrus, Adele, Bieber, and it's in that early 2000s, so I think like she's hitting... It's like what TikTok is now to teenagers. Mm-hmm. You know, like she's hitting her stride. People are reaching out. Her phone's blowing up. Like she's becoming well known in the YouTube space. She gets traction from it. She releases her debut song called Find Me. Her YouTube channel reaches 1 million, then 2 million followers. Again, she's like blowing up in YouTube. She's not someone I heard about, but like she found her niche and like people found her and loved her. It's 2012. There is a My YouTube competition and she finishes second behind Selena Gomez.
Say what?
Amazing. And at this point, she gets on Selena Gomez's radar and Selena's mom is like, this girl is super talented. I'm going to help her get started. Mm-hmm. So like she sort of is like getting, you know, welcomed into the industry. People are finding out about her. She goes on to perform backup vocals for Selena Gomez and her band at the time. And she even goes on tour with Selena Gomez and opens up for her. So like her career, she's cool. It's really exciting. She's appearing on The Ellen DeGeneres Show. Her music, I think the reason I did not hear about it is a lot of it was like played on Radio Disney. Like I feel like she was specifically to like a young tween kind of vibe at that moment. It's 2014 and The Voice is on and she's going, I'm going to audition for the fucking Voice. Yeah. So she's on The Voice and she sings Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus, and wouldn't you know it, boom, 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 all four chairs turn. She gets it. She chooses to be on Adam Levine's team. While she's on the show, she does really well. They describe her voice as like Celine Dion. Like she just is like a very good, she's a very capable singer, very good voice. And although she doesn't win The Voice, she's still offered like a bunch of record contracts. She's offered a contract with Adam's label, with Lil Wayne's label. She ends up third on the competition, but she signs with Island Records and she works with them for a little while. It's 2016. She releases her second EP. She's also in this movie called The Matchbreaker. Very exciting stuff. But her career is launching. She's just getting out there more. She's performing. Her brother is on the road with her as her road manager. It's June 10th, 2016. She's 22 years old, and she has just opened for a band called Before You Exit. It's in Orlando, Florida, and her performance goes until like 10 o'clock, and she's out by her merch table signing autographs, meeting fans, taking pictures, out and about. At 10:24, she is approached by 27-year-old Kevin Loibel. He approaches her. We don't know what is said. She opens her arms to give him a hug. He pulls out a gun and he shoots her 3 times.
What? Why?
Her brother is next to her. He's her road manager. Remember, her brother is there. Her brother launches at this guy, tackles him. They get into a scuffle. Kevin Loibel gets up, sort of like walks back into a wall. He has a gun on him. He shoots himself. He's dead. Christina is taken to the hospital. Again, this all happened at 10:24. She's taken to the hospital. At 10:59, she is pronounced dead.
Wow.
She is shot once in the head and twice in the chest. Her assailant is dead. And at this point, the investigation is underway. They're figuring out why he did this. What the fuck happened? They know that Kevin Loibel traveled by taxi from his home in St. Petersburg, Florida. He brought with him 2 handguns, 2 magazines of ammo, 2 extra magazines of ammo, and a large hunting knife. They believe that he came, checked into a hotel. The hotel is very clean. They think he slept on top of the sheets, and he planned to go home after. They don't believe he intended to kill himself. What's significant is this venue that she was performing at had no metal detectors. Mm-hmm. None of the attendees' bags were checked, were searched. One attendee at the concert said that the security was more worried about bringing outside food in and didn't even catch Loibel's guns. It's important to note that Kevin Loibel purchased his guns completely legally. He, just a couple of days before the shooting, he did not have an arrest record. He did have some run-ins with the police, but he has no diagnosis of mental illness. He does have a history of some violence. He never met her before. This is the first time he met her, and he was infatuated with her. His friend who calls himself his only friend in the world who knew him for 15 years. Like, this guy was a loner. Mm-hmm. His family didn't even know mm-hmm. about Christina Grimmie. Like, his family did not know about The Voice. They yeah. never heard her name. They had no idea mm-hmm. that he had this obsession mm-hmm. with this young girl. He spent, like, every waking moment watching videos of her. He would stalk her through social media. He would follow her. He did not have social media himself. So he would just, like, go on, follow her, watch every video about her. It reminds me of the story I did, Casey Joy, where in that case, he changed his appearance. Kevin Loibel started losing weight. He got hair transplants. He got his teeth whitened. He had eye surgery, all to improve his looks in the hopes of meeting her.
Right.
Like I said, he did not have many people in his life. He had family who, again, didn't know he even owned a gun. They never heard of Christina Grimmie. His quote, like I said, only friend in the world, said he knew about his obsession, but not to this extent. Mm-hmm. He said that when he would question Kevin about this obsession he had, or he would say, it's unrealistic to assume that you're going to be together with this woman, Kevin would get angry. He'd get defensive. He was not religious. However, Christina was very open about her Christian faith. And his friend recalls a moment where Kevin was telling him about how, even though he claimed to be an atheist, Christina's belief in Christianity had changed him and, quote, helped him to see the world in a different way. And if there was a God, he has seen it in her. What's really interesting about the timeline of this in 2016 is that Christina Grimmie was killed. And then not 48 hours later was the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Oh.
And so Florida, back to back in Orlando. Mm-hmm. Her concert was in Orlando and Pulse is also in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And so back to back, we have these two tragedies back to back. Of course, obviously Pulse, 49 people were killed. Yeah. And it really... it highlights just like what an issue we have with guns mm-hmm. in this fucking country.
Yeah.
In 2017, her second EP was released. In 2019, her album was released posthumously. Her mother died in 2018 from breast cancer. But as of 2019, she has 4 million followers still on her YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. As recently as 2022, there was a duet with her vocals that was released. And I think what we also see with these tragic moments is family coming together and people speaking out. And I think in her case, because she was a notable figure, people knew her. She had fans. She had a following. Her death, you know, increased calls for security at performing art venues. Excuse me. Gun control, obviously mental health. They created the Christina Grimmie Foundation, and its purpose is to support those affected by gun violence and breast cancer, obviously because that was close to her, because her mother had it. The foundation has given out more than $350,000 in grants and has assisted more than 100 families in those who are affected by gun violence. Wow. But it's just this crazy story of this woman who, and I think I particularly connected with this because this is a young woman who was out and trying to hustle and wanted to be a singer and had done a show opening for this band Before You Exit, which is just a wild name in coincidence. And she's sitting there out at the merch table meeting her fans.
Yeah, it's so unexpected.
It's so unexpected. And she's trying to meet the people who are going to support her, and she's trying to, you know, foster those fan relationships. And I think, you know, I know that feeling, you know, and there was no evidence that she was being stalked. There was no evidence. There were no threats right. that were given to her. It just happened.
It went from 0 to 10. I mean, that's the other thing. Yeah. This guy, what a choice.
And he had no friends. And what's crazy, again, legally, he got a gun. He had a history of violence, which should preclude anyone from not getting a fucking gun.
Yeah.
But like, no mental health diagnoses. And so, of course, like, we're going to, like, this person was mentally very unwell. Yeah. But it's crazy because his family didn't know mm-hmm. his obsession with her. He had one friend who was like, yeah, I knew he was obsessed, but I didn't know to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so I want to tell the story of Christina Grimmie, who seems like just a ray of sunshine And it's so sad. And the fact that her brother was there and saw it all.
Oh my God.
And the police commended her brother for his quick action because they think that he could have saved more people because he was so quick to tackle him and just fucking attack this guy, this crazy guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a story of Christina.
Wow,
Grimmie.
That's such a sad story.
It's really sad.
Thank you for telling it.
You're welcome.
R.I.P. my happiness.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening. I have to go.
You need to do a sturdy like that.
All right,
huh?
Let's actually end with a positive thing. Let's end with a positive thing.
Do you want me to read a Jack Handy?
Yes, please.
All right. It takes a big man to cry, but it takes an even bigger man to laugh at that man.
That's the quote.
How about this? I guess we were kind of poor when we were kids, but we didn't know it. That's because my dad always refused to let us look at the family's financial records.
I just really like that every kid is poor.
Yeah. I do love that. Or one more just for good riddance. If you ever drop your keys into a river of molten lava, let them go. Because, man, they're gone.
Well, on that note.
On that note.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Like, subscribe, review, live, laugh, love, stay safe. And, well, I shouldn't say that, but, you know.
Just you do you.
You do you. Love you. Yeah.